Our Monday 9:05 regular is Darren Haynes. And speaking of regular, we're 4 minutes late to you, 9:09, which is about normal. How was the weekend, Hainsey?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I went on a golf trip to Kimberly.
I think you mentioned that last week. A bunch of the boys, family, what happened?
Oh, yeah. No, there was eight of us piled into a 1984 RV of some description, a camper van, I'll call it, and we headed out there to be little kids for a few days.
Well, I hope you got it licensed. Was that done? Because that would have been a lot of fun to make that drive a little shorter.
You know, funny story heading out of town. We were not very far at all. I mean, we're just settling in. We're just going past that Esso on Highway 1. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of rattling coming from our sunroof. Mm. And someone goes to kind of tighten it, and whoosh, there it goes. Sunroof rips off. It goes flying through the air, lands flat on the other side of the highway. We think it might be intact. Mm. Just as we're looking for a place to turn around, the semi pulls right by the other lane and smashes that thing to a million pieces. So that's how it began, and sitting there duct taping up our sunroof. And I'll tell you, big plug for duct tape. It held like you wouldn't believe. Rain persevered anything. That was a trip.
Well done. Fantastic. See, you know what? Driving through the mountains mid-June in a convertible, that's what everyone dreams of, right?
Yeah. Well, if only we could peel back that duct tape, maybe take some fresh air, but we thought beating the rain was the better play there.
So what did Friday look like? Were you out of town? Did you get a chance to see Glenn Gulletson in person? I'm sure you've heard the audio at a minimum.
Yeah, no, I saw the audio. No, we were already on the highway. Listen to it. Listen to the presser, and caught a bit of various appearances. Certainly he made the rounds, the talk show circuit.
Yep.
Caught him on Tim and Sid, a video of that, and caught him on the afternoon show and whatnot. So certainly he played to the crowd, a lot of optimism, and I think a lot of people were pretty happy with his hire. A lot of people who would not have known who this guy was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and we started talking about him about a month ago, how many people knew about him. But I think everybody's pretty confident from my ear to social media, you know, from a fan perspective, it sounds like people are pretty pleased with his hire.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think a week ago when this name had been speculated, it was like, oh, well, that's not really like a sexy, that's not the Guy Boucher who, you know, rallied with the Lightning and took them on a long run. It wasn't as if this was Bruce Boudreau with, you know, a top five winning percentage all time in terms of coaching in the regular season. And yet, all the things we'd heard about the checklist, communication, a young guy that can grow with this core, getting the most out of the players, those points were hammered home on Friday. It does feel like a good fit.
Yeah, you know, he just, you know, he talked about relationship building and just being he comes across as someone who is genuinely going to be someone that cares about his players, very interested to know all about them, to get to know them, their families, you know, and even just looking at tactically of the type of game he wanted to play. I mean, 2 weeks ago, the buzz was, oh my God, did you hear what Brian Burke was saying at the season ticket holder meetings about, we need to get bigger, we need to get stronger. Those were not the words that were coming out on Friday. He was talking about playing fast. He kind of talked about doing what Pittsburgh did, and they just won the Stanley Cup. So I think that's got to excite fans. And, hey, I'll be selfish here. I go to these games, and I'd rather be entertained than be bored. So selfishly for me, if the Flames are going to play an entertaining style, I'm all in for that as well.
Chatting with Darren Haynes, a regular Monday guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline for South Street Burger. Delight in a flame-grilled burger and choose from over 30 gourmet toppings. Satisfy your cravings with South Street Burger, better burgers, fries, and shakes. Okay, so we're almost done on the coaching front. They've got their head guy. We know Jelena's returning. Video and netminding coaches back in the fold, but there's one hire that remains. I was doing some sniffing around and got word from a good source Friday morning. They would not be announcing an associate or another assistant. What do you see in store? Is it one more hire? Is it two? And who should we be keying in on?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they've decided that yet. Yeah, definitely at least one. And the name that came up, and interestingly enough, Aaron Portsline, your guest earlier this morning, was the one that reported it, said that a lot of calls are coming into to Columbus organization for permission to talk to Jared Bednar. Now, Jared Bednar is a guy that is kind of one of those, could be a next in line guy, a guy who just won with Lake Erie the Calder Cup. Interestingly enough, joins Bruce Boudreau as the only two coaches in history to win both the Kelly Cup in the ECHL and the Calder Cup. So you want to talk about, you know, you want to talk about names, there you go. And this is something we've seen in recent years is this trend towards successful AHL coaches jumping to the NHL. And that's not a new trend, but it seems like it's happening quicker and with more frequency. And if you go back to 2012, who was the coach of the winning team that year in the Calder Cup? John Cooper. The year after that, Jeff Blashill, now with Detroit. And after that, Willie Desjardins.
Yeah.
Three straight went to the NHL, or now NHL headman. So what has Jared Bednar done? Well, he was in the final last year and lost. This year he's in the final and won. They won 15 out of 17 games in the playoffs.
Wow.
So it's quite a record. But there, if you start digging into it, there's a few other things that are notable. First of all, he's in that exact same age range as Treliving and Gullitson. He's a Western guy. He's from Yorkton. He played in the Dub and also just missed playing with Gullitson in Saskatoon by a year. So he's kind of got all these kind of similar. He was in the ECHL for a long time where, interestingly enough, when he won his Kelly Cup, his goaltender was James Reimer. So maybe let's keep an eye on that little side note if this, something develops on and this guy ends up being a fit. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is indeed someone, as Aaron Portzline reported, that Calgary would have interest in, because he's someone that is available. Calgary is a team still looking for assistant coaches. And there is, I think that track record of success that he has is something the organization would be interested in.
He was with the Abbotsford organization in 2009-10, and then when I was there, he was working with Peoria before they moved to Springfield. Another Western guy, interesting. And of course, Lake Erie, you mentioned, they knocked off, they paved the way for the Cavaliers. They won a championship, proving that the mistake on the lake could be a championship city, right?
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, as you said, so after he won the Kelly Cup in the ECHL, his first jump to the A was in Abbotsford, in that first year in Abbotsford, where he worked under Jim Playfair. So he's been in the Flames organization for a short time before he got the head job at Peoria. So a name to keep an eye on as we go in the next weeks to come, or week to come. I mean, I think that, I don't know if this is the focus this week necessarily with the draft coming up, but you would expect that hire to happen sooner than later. Because again, if it's someone coming from another organization, there's a there where the other organization needs time then to replace. So it is the hire, whether it's him or someone else, that you'd expect to happen pretty quickly.
Who would be another candidate? We heard Todd Reirden's name late in the process for the head coaching job. Is it a natural to assume that he could become an associate or assistant, or are things sticky because it isn't a straight promotion necessarily coming from Washington?
No, I think there's different reasons people will move, different opportunities. They may just be seeking a fresh start. We just saw Brad Shaw go from St. Louis to Columbus, going from associate back to assistant. Guys just look for different opportunities. So the Reardon's name, I think some of the names we've heard along the coaching search would be names that you keep in mind, Ralph Krueger, and again, maybe someone to keep an eye on. And I know just in talking to Brad Treliving last week, earlier in the week, about the associate coach job and what that hiring timeline was. And he definitely said that he wanted to sit down, get input, talk with his new coach, who of course now we know who it is, and just kind of get his input, because he's going to be working closely with him. But he did have some names in mind, guys that he had been keeping in touch with and came across in his search for the head coach. So, it could be any of those names or other candidates that we've heard during the coach search.
I will say this about Krueger. Of course, he's with Southampton Football Club in the Premiership, correct? And he is going to coach the European side in the World Cup. I don't know that an NHL team can pay him to get him to coach for his career. I believe he's being very well compensated by Southampton Football. It might be a 1/10 of his salary if he comes on to be an associate, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. And what motivates people, you never know, right? Like, small anecdote. I worked with the Calgary Cannons for a long time, and I remember a guy came through, and he was a minor league baseball announcer. And I got to talking to him one day. He was a lawyer that gave up being a lawyer to become an AHL baseball announcer because he loved baseball, right? So you never know what motivates different people, right? So, I hear you on that, and it's a name that we've heard, so that's it. But, I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah, okay, very good. Moving forward, number 6 is on the slate for Friday. Let's move our attention there for the Calgary Flames. They've had some success at 6. They've had some pretty epic swing and miss at 6 way back to the early 90s, which were not good drafting days. Do you think they come to the podium at 6, or are you sniffing around perhaps a trade either down to get more assets or up to try to increase the quality of that pick?
I still think they end up at six. I think it makes for great sports talk in the weeks and months leading up to the draft. It so rarely happens, trades in that neighborhood, because your teams that are moving down want full value for the guy they think they're giving up. Teams that are giving up guys to move up are giving up prospects, and they want full value. Like, it's just, there's so much you're talking hypothetically that it's hard to make those deals come together. So I think they probably end up at six. I don't think they're trading down. I mean, I go back to a conversation with the GM probably 6 weeks ago, and that's when just, you know, playoffs in various leagues were wrapping up. At that point, they were pretty settled. They had a top six, and what's happened to maybe influence that since then? The Memorial Cup is about it. So I think you start to fall in love with guys that you maybe seen in those late looks, but they seem pretty settled at that point. Can't tell you who that number six guy or number five guy or what that order is on their list, but they seem to be pretty happy with a top six that they had at that time. And this is even pre-lottery. So, I feel like it's with all this talk, it's almost going to play out as we thought all along. Like, it would not be surprised me at all if the top three or the three as we want, Edmonton stays at four and
it's
takes the Chuck.
Yeah.
Dubois goes to Vancouver, and then you're looking at Calgary and who they see as that sixth guy that they were kind of so confident in. Is it Alex Nylander? Is it a defenseman? We'll see. But I still feel like a defenseman's not the way to go, just from what they have in the system and just the unpredictability with picking defensemen, right? You know, the if it's close, if it's a push, take the forward. That seems to be the rule, and history has taught us this. And so, do they see a defenseman close enough to be the best guy, hands down, at six? Wait and see. I'm not sure that's the case.
No, you're right. It's easier to swing and miss on a defenseman at six than it would be a forward. It's really easy to swing and miss on goalies. We've seen that here with Leland Irving and Brent Cron as first rounders. I wonder how they factor that in, because I think really good organizations, or at least, you know, GMs that are into a bit of the math and the data, would handicap that into their rankings. Maybe that's built into a ratings, and you still have, with that increased risk, the sixth best player on your board as a defenseman. And you know what? I do find it curious, because I think you're right about the top five. Those would seem like consensus picks. Those five guys go. So who do they like? Is it a skilled forward that isn't physical and Alex Nylander? Is it a big centerman like Logan Brown? Do they take their pick of the litter for defensemen? Because to the top five, there's no D in there. Is it Sergachev? Are you high on Jake Bean? There's some teams that love him for sure. Is it Yolevi, Chychrun, Slides? Six is an interesting spot, but it also underlines why you'd want to be, you know, you would pay a premium to move up from six, because it's not one of those top five guys.
Yeah, I feel there's, you know, and could they flip, flip something? You never see Calgary Edmonton make trades, so rarely, but, you know, is there an opportunity? Do they like to chuck enough to give up a D prospect perhaps to move up to four? That, if anything, I think they move up. I think getting to three, as we've discussed before, is awfully difficult, just because of what you have to give up to do that. But I don't see a scenario where they trade down, but I could be wrong. Maybe as they've gone together and the scouting staff got together, maybe they did relook and reexamine their rankings, and maybe they did come up with a guy that they have at six who they feel they can get at eight. And then, well, it does make sense to drop down two spots if you can still get your guy. So that's the wild card in all this.
That, you know, you're right. If they've got a guy, if their rankings are vastly different than what they expect to happen behind them, then by all means trade down. But I don't know. I get the sense they're trying to get up to three. And why wouldn't you if you had a chance to get one of those dynamic guys in the top three? I think we all imagine that to be Puljarvi at three hole. Let's move along here, just to continuing on this week and things we're going to learn. We're going to get some clarification on expansion, when, what year, when's the draft, and I think most importantly, rules on who you can and cannot protect. What do we know and what do we expect to learn this week?
Well, the question I've kind of been peppering Brad Treliving with over the past, it feels like, since the season-ending presser is what about John Gillies? Because John Gillies is in this weird spot where he's played seven career pro games, all in the AHL, and he's going into his third year of his entry-level contract. So it's weird to think that he's in his third year, but he is, the way it worked out, the way he joined the team late that one year, even though he didn't get into any action, that burned a year. So he's in this kind of unique situation, and whenever you hear the rules, it talks about vaguely about 2 years of pro. Well, he does have 2 years of pro if you go by that criteria. But I asked him specifically about that last week, and he said, we'll wait and see till the rules come out, and then we know for sure it's happening. But we're under the understanding, this is him talking, that John Gillies will be exempt. So that's kind of how they're operating right now, is with that kind of, they're pretty certain that he will be exempt, because it's a big deal for this Flames organization. They're looking for goalies right now. If John Gillies has to be protected, that is a game changer. So, that's their understanding, and I think that's a big one, and we should learn, I think this week we should learn for sure on how that's going
to
work.
I tell you what, if you have to protect Gillies, that totally changes your approach. Maybe now you're packaging him up if you're going to get a goalie, because you won't be able to keep both, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And do you bring in, just the ripple effect from that particular ruling. So they have a plan, and they, based on their understanding, and so I think they're taking an approach, and I think right now if they're making those calls about Marc-Andre Fleury, they're making those calls about other goaltenders, I think they're doing so with the understanding that that goalie that they bring in, they will be able to protect, because they won't need to protect Gillies.
Final quick ones for you. A buyout window is open. Do you expect any action? Would Mason Raymond be a guy that you could see that happening to?
Yeah, you know what? If you asked me as soon as the season ended, I would have said absolutely. If you had asked me shortly after Bob Hartley had been let go, then I'm like, I think so, but let's kind of wait and see on the new coach. Well, now that we've heard from the new coach, and I wasn't there to ask this question specifically, and it would have been too early anyway, but just from what he's preaching about speed up and down the lineup, it feels like this could be a chance for Mason Raymond to get back on the NHL roster this year. And there are going to be some openings. Think about the veterans that have moved on, and the David Joneses and the Hoodlers. And so, I think I've gone from probably maybe one or two. Smead is injured, so he can't be one. And I would have thought Raymond if he's going to spend another year in the minors, but I think he might get another chance this camp and see how that works out. So I'm down to zero at this point on my prediction on the buyouts.
A little trivia for you. Today is June 20th. It's a special day, one that we should celebrate in Calgary. What is it?
Ooh, June 20th, celebrate in Calgary. I don't have an answer for you.
Well, if you're thinking summer solstice, you're right and you're wrong, but it's Sam Bennett turns 20 today. Huge round of applause, please, Jay. No longer 18-year-old or 19-year-old. It is now 20-year-old Sam Bennett.
So 19-year-old Sam Bennett is 20.
There you go. 18-year-old Sam Bennett is 20 now. Unbelievable stuff. Thanks for your time today, buddy.
All right. Talk soon.
Darren Haynes, flamesfromradiofeet.ca.